live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I was already interacting on Periscope about questions for my guest, and I have never had royalty ever on my show. This is just the most amazing honor. So I'm excited to welcome the program, Your Royal Highness Princess Catherine of Serbia. Princess Catherine, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Good morning. Thank you very much. I'm delighted to have a chance to be with your audience and to talk to you. And I'm doing well. I'm just looking forward to our activities here in the United States for my husband and I.
Oh, absolutely. But I have to start off, Princess Catherine, and looking at specifically enough your journey of becoming a princess, the whole life's journey of being prepared for this. Now, tell us your story specifically, going back
I appreciate that. First of all, I would like to say that I always believe that the title doesn't make the person. The title is an opportunity, actually, to make a difference in this world we live in. And I was very, very lucky to have had parents who taught me the joy of giving, not the joy of taking, from the time I was very young. And my mother always used to say, happiness is when you give of yourself. And so she prepared me for my role without really knowing what my future will be. So none of the parents in the world know, but we must create a good foundation for the children. So when they have, when they're blessed with an opportunity to do some good in this world, they will be ready for it. So, and this is my work is a privilege to do, and that is to help all those in need, especially children. And that is what my life is all about. Yes.
Okay, so basically, throughout your life, your family prepared you for this this role, and that charity work has been your life's mission. It sounds like.
Well, my work is very exciting because my husband, who is the son of King Peter of Yugoslavia and the grandson of King Alexander of Yugoslavia, as well as the grandson of King Alexander of Greece. So both of his grandfathers were kings. But he has been in exile for all these years, and we managed to come home, as we say, to Serbia only 14 years ago. So we moved in the palace in Belgrade, but it was a very exciting time to be back and a very sad time as well. When we went to the country in 1991 for the first time, my husband being in exile for over 50 years, he was very emotional and it was very exciting. There were more than 500,000 people waiting for him to receive him. But since then, we've been working even before he ever came to the country. We've been working to helping the people. He's always wanted to do the best he can for the country, and which he's never been. And he always said, you know, I want to make sure that if we ever are blessed to go back, I like to make sure that when we look at the people in their eyes, they know that we have been with them all along. So we've been helping the people, moved into the palace 14 years ago, and started our work. It was very difficult, mainly because it was 40% unemployment at the time. Mm-hmm. And there was a war in the country of over 10 years. So the country was really pretty much paralyzed. So especially the hospitals, it was unbelievable what we had to go through. It was one-third of the medical equipment didn't work at all. One-third was more than 30 years old, and only one-third really functioned. So this was throughout the country. So my husband and I, at this point, 14 years later, we've been to every hospital, every clinic. We've given medical equipment, ambulances, and we have supported the country in general, the old people's homes, because they, in our country, there used to be a family unit where the grandparents lived with the family and raised the grandchildren, and that's how tradition kept going from one family to the other through the grandparents. But then during the war, there's been so many people, so much destruction in people's lives that the family unit was no longer there, and the old people ended up in old people's homes and did not have the pleasure of growing, being next to the grandchildren and next to the family, which is what we are meant to be here in this world, to have a
yes.
family and to be happy and to make a difference in the world. But anyway, and then, of course, we had many, many orphans, many orphans,
yes.
and have been very supportive of our orphanages. And we have gotten a lot of programs for them because we believe the children are our future.
Yes.
And we're always doing things for the children. At the moment, I'm preparing a sticker to be in the cars, or and
mm-hmm.
that say, "Have you praised your child today?"
Great.
Because I
yes.
think that we need to raise children with confidence, and although we need to make corrections for them, and we at the same time have to balance it with praising, because if we only correct them, they will think they've done nothing right in life.
Yes.
So it's not just the education, it's the mental health that we give our children
yeah,
that makes
absolutely.
A big difference.
Yes, Princess Catherine, it's really a sad thing when the parents aren't praising their kids because they feel like they can't do anything right, so they
yes,
turn
exactly.
to the wrong things. Confidence is an important part, especially growing up in this day and age, isn't it?
It's very important, and as I feel the mother of my country, I feel a responsibility to all our young people in our country, and starting, of course, with the orphans and then going into the rest of them. Actually, my husband has a foundation of education, and he's doing an amazing job. He has all the deans of the medical schools and all the deans of the universities in our country are on his board. And he's able to work with all those deans and doing the best he can with the universities. He created career centers so they will know what a CV is and how it needs to be prepared in order for them to eventually, when they finish university, to achieve to have a job. Centers also are working and helping the children find a job by the time they get out of the university, because it's very important that they feel recognized of their effort in studying and getting somewhere. And this was very good. But my husband, talking about education, is doing something incredible in the last 14 years for the young people. He gives an award to the top high school student of every high school in the country.
Oh, wow.
Every June, 600 young people from 600 high schools come with their parents. So we end up with 600 young people and 1,200 parents, 1,800 in a palace. And this is a huge, big day for them and for us. And apparently the headmasters are telling us that the challenge that these children have,
mm-hmm.
when they first start a school year, they have a bet. It will be me going to the palace to get this award. And someone else says, no, I decided I'm going to work very hard this year. So the grades have never been so sky high. And it is the most exciting thing. And the parents are extremely happy seeing their child getting awarded by my husband, photographs
yes.
with the grandparents in the villages, tears, emotions. It is amazing. It's a wonderful atmosphere. And we look forward to it every year. And it gives a chance, and the Minister of Education comes as well. We invite him. And it gives us a chance to get closer to the young people. And when my husband, when we are in town or wherever we are, there's children coming saying, "I'm one of those. I'm one of those who you awarded, you know, and now I'm doing this and that," because obviously a lot, the last 14 years I've gotten out of high school. They started a family. They have
yeah.
jobs. So they never fail to approach my husband and say, "Can I have a picture with you? The last picture I had was when I was 18 and I got my award from you." So anyway, and it's a wonderful feeling. But we also look after our orphans. For
yeah.
Christmas and Easter, I have 1,200 children that come to the palace. And as a matter of fact, I want to share something.
Sure.
If I may, yes, please. What happened is some years ago when we started this, there was an Easter time and it was egg hunting. Mm-hmm. By the way, we look after all the children and all the people, regardless of religion or ethnic origin. We respect everyone. And so what happened was the children came back into the palace excited with finding the eggs that they were hidden and all that. And all of a sudden we had a scream in the middle of the living room in the palace. And we ran to see what happened. There was a little boy who was 8 and a little girl who was 6. Brother and sister who were separated by mistake during the war. And they found each other in the middle of the room in the palace.
Oh, wow. The tremendous thing.
I have tears in my eyes.
I'm sure.
I can never tell the story without having tears in my eyes. Because it was the most amazing, amazing moment to witness. The little girl was looking up in the ceiling, saying, is Mommy and Daddy coming down too?
Yeah.
Because she was told they're all up there. And since she could see her brother next to her, she thought, they will come too. And when we had the Minister of Social Services with us at the time, and she said to me, Princess Catherine, this is God's will for these children out of 1,200 to be meeting right here and right now, before they get older and their face change and they will not recognize each other sometimes. So anyway, and then when we were ready to put them in a bus to go to the same institute, of course, we would never separate them again. We couldn't separate them to even get them in the bus. They got in as a unit, and they stayed like that for a long time. So this is the things that make me even more passionate. Like a little boy in a institute that he was there in an orphanage, he said, come to my room. So I went to his room, and he lifted up his pillow, and there was a candy bar there. I said, I thought I gave you this candy bar when I was here a couple months ago to visit you. He says, you did. But that was the best day of my life when you came to visit me.
Oh, so working with these the homeless children, orphanages, and seeing from a variety of cultures of kids and different things, and be able to help them, it's as you said, it's your life's work, and that's what you've been bringing up throughout
the
show. Well,
it is. It is amazing. I am the official coordinator for the health of the country, and so I have been very, very busy with trying to do conferences and bringing doctors from all over the world. We do that every year. We have it this year, May 18. And when we even have a website, which is SerbianDiasporaMedical.rs. And this website shows that for 3 days, May 18, 19, and 20, we bring doctors from all over the world who get together with our doctors and help them to increase their education, exchange ideas. And it's wonderful because it reflects in a big way into the patients and the ability to cope with new situations and have new methods to work with. So, but we are also looking around to the hospitals, making note of what they're missing. It's very, very sad to see what happens because we had, for example, the highest mortality of newborn because the women for 10 years didn't want to have any children. And when they started having a family, they were a little bit too old to carry them from the 9 months. So the majority of our babies after the war were premature. And I would work in a hospital and there was a princess. We had 8 babies last night and we have 2 incubators, 8 premature babies. What do we do? So I had to work very hard and do something immediately to stop this. And so I was very lucky to have been born in Greece and to call my family and friends and everybody in Greece and said, look, in 2 weeks we're going to have an event. And they said, and I told everybody, have you ever been to dinner with an incubator? They said, never.
Oh,
I said, well, this is a dinner to save lives. So we had a dinner where everyone had to come with an incubator, And believe it or not, we raised over 1 million euros that night.
Fantastic.
On incubators. And we put them all over in different parts of the country, and then we did more events, and we got another 200. So we ended up with over 200 incubators to save our babies. So we have been very fortunate in the neonatal intensive care situation.
How much more work do you see? I see that you're putting such an emphasis on healthcare, education in your country to build it back up from the time you were exiled to finally coming back to Serbia, and the lessons learned that building your healthcare infrastructure and your education infrastructure is so important to rebuild the country. Am I correct?
Yes, it is. It is very, very, very important. If we want a bright and a good future, we must focus on the education and health, which is God's gift to everyone.
Yes.
We need to be that. Because, you know, I'm very sad to say that we live in a world, Neil, where there is money for war, but there is no money for peace.
Right.
There is strategy for war, but no strategy for peace.
No.
And until we all invest in peace, we cannot be expecting peace. So these children are raised now in a world that is not as bright as it should be for them. And
right.
In a world where we are all responsible for what we have. And, of course, we need to go back to our leaders in the world and pray and hope that we will have leaders who will work for the people, not against the people, the leaders who would put people first, because there is such a difficult time for so many countries at the moment, and
yeah.
We are here to really enjoy each other, have a good future, and starting with our children and their education is what it is all about. And my husband actually got 40 scholarships for children and in Nottingham University in United Kingdom, and then he got some scholarships in United States, and so we are very grateful whenever universities give us an opportunity to send one of our children abroad to be able to educate them and bring them back with a new way of thinking, learning something new, and have something even more important to contribute.
A day in the life of a princess. Can you kind of tell us that? Because you think of royalty, you think of specifically the United Kingdom, you think of just specifically royalty and looking at princesses from life's, your daily, how do your days go for our listeners
well,
out there?
Well, I tell
really,
you, the
yeah,
thing
yeah.
is, yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I want to say that my daughter has bought me a shirt that says it's not easy to bring a princess, to be a princess. And she's right. And actually, you know, we have a lot of children that are coming to the palace. And when they look at me, they look so disappointed. They say, "Princess, princess, where is your crown?" I said, "My crown is in my heart. Without love, we have nothing." So basically, a monarchy brings unity. You know, we're above politics, above religion. We're just there to care for the people. Without people, there is no country. So, and being in exile, he was only physically in exile because mentally the family was always, always with the people.
Mm-hmm.
So a day in my life means really getting up, although one lives in a palace, you don't really spend much time enjoying it because there isn't any time. My husband, either we are going abroad seeking help, being
yes.
able to fulfill all these wishes that people have, whether it's fixing schools, going into children's places with that have mental problems or children with special needs. We have built,
oh, wow.
I don't even know what number we have built of sensor rooms for children with special needs. They've been very well taken care of by us because I believe that they are children of the world as well, and we have a responsibility for them. Then we have tried very much to build, for example, old people's homes, hospices, palliative care. They never heard of this. I had to send some people to United Kingdom to learn what palliative care is and bring them back and build palliative care. We have a lot, you know, some mental institutions. We'll be looking after them. And we'll be looking out of all the institutions pretty much that we have for handicapped children. We have created a lot of wonderful situations, like, for example, musical schools. We have helped the children with playing tennis because, you know, after Novak Djokovic, everybody wants to be a tennis
yes.
player in that country. So, and actually, Novak has been wonderful. I do my charity work all over the world. I always have Novak's tennis balls signed by him with a picture
wow.
of he and I and posters and sign them, and people love to have them. So we have encouraged the sports in our country, and we actually we believe that there's a lot that one can do in making a country having a good future if one focuses in the education and the young people. So we have been very involved. So my day is getting up in the morning and making sure all the palace staff and all the people know what needs to be done for their day. We open the palaces a lot because for 50 years during communism they were closed. Nobody was allowed in the palace unless
mm-hmm.
you were a member of a royal family or unless you were head of state or something. So when my husband came, he said, okay, I'm home, so are my people home. So we open it. Really? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, sorry. And it's been really quite a privilege to be able to bring all these people in who never used to be able to
yeah.
come in. They
yeah.
could only see it from the railing. It's 140 hectares in the middle of town with those two palaces. And so they're fascinating seeing all of them. And but we have visitors who come. I'm normally visiting hospitals, making deliveries. For example, we recently, about a year ago actually, we had floods throughout the country, and more than 35,000 people were affected in the middle of the night. So my husband and I were on a boat in the streets delivering things because we couldn't walk. Everything was flooded, all the cars, their houses, the people, everything was destroyed. So it took us quite a while for 35,000 people to rebuild their lives. So we've had many situations where we try to support whatever disasters we may have or whatever is happening in the country. We're always there. So my days are split between the visiting various schools and institutes and hospitals, and then, of course, receiving various like, for example, the hospital people. They all want to improve their situation, so we have meetings all day coming. And some people are for the blind people, some people are for hard of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
For example, this year, for hard of hearing, I sent to Detroit two teachers from an institute of children who cannot hear, and a mother and a child, and they went there for 1 month to a camp. This year, my plan is to make a camp for those who cannot hear well in Serbia, and so I'm bringing the people here. Also, we just celebrated SOS Childline, 10 years of SOS Childline. This was a great celebration. When my husband and I came to the country, we discovered there is no phone number for the children who might be abused or have a hard time in their homes. And we were very worried about it because a lot of the orphans have been given to families to raise and things like that. And they're always, as in every country, as difficult situations that sometimes the children are facing. So the first thing I did is to try to create an SOS child line, which was the first 800 number in the country.
That's
and
great.
I brought some people from Brussels and United Kingdom. We trained the people, and we had an amazing situation with our country where we had 500,000 phone calls from children in the last 10 years. So I was absolutely, I could not believe it. 500,000 children
in 10 years. Such tremendous things, Princess Catherine. And when I think about specifically your life's work and how much energy you have, and I'm glad you told people, living in a palace, you're constantly, would you say you and your husband together have this service mentality of helping others, and how you are so dedicated, both of you together, to helping the country of Serbia from being exiled for so long that when she got back, you said we have to really get to work, and that together you have that mission. Would you say? Do you think it's
absolutely,
not,
absolutely? My husband, when we met, and you know we've been married 30 years now, he said to me, "Look, my country is my life." My country is my life. The welfare of my country is my life. He says to me, I've never been there. But it doesn't matter. I know who I am and my responsibilities. He's an amazing man. He is absolutely amazing.
That's great.
His godmother is Her Majesty the Queen and of England, and his godfather is King George.
Oh.
And
wow.
So, and he is so down to earth. And we've been to every a country, visiting all the royal families around the world and all that, but that never goes over our head. We know who we are, and we know what our mission is in life. And when you have this passion, this mission,
yes.
My husband has become the symbol of unity, stability, and continuity. And we are really not back because he's a son of King Peter. We are back because he helped to bring democracy in the country.
That's fantastic.
And this is what is important. He united the opposition leaders in Budapest. Then he united them in Greece. And after this unity of meetings and conferences, they decided they will come back to the country, have elections, and win. And that's what happened. So my husband got the call saying, please come home. You have united us, and you have brought democracy to your country, the country you never lived in, so now you should come home. And so we are back, and we have committed ourselves. But the thing is that we cannot do it alone, Neil. The demands are enormous.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm working here in New York now with an office that we have for many years. It's LifelineNY.org. And we have been working with New York, and we have an event tomorrow here in New York. And the purpose of the event is in aid of medical equipment for the Children's Hospital.
Uh-huh.
Then on Saturday, we go to Toronto, Canada, and we do the same thing. We have an event there. And you, I know you won't believe what is in aid of, but it's unbelievable. It's in aid of cars. Cars.
Wow.
And you might wonder, why cars?
Yeah.
I'll tell you exactly why. People who need treatment, like dialysis machine, or people who need to be helped with because they need to have a treatment, chemotherapy, they need to be picked up from their home to be brought to the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and to have their treatment and to be brought back. Unfortunately, the people don't get picked up because
no.
there's no cars.
No.
There are no cars in the clinics and in the hospitals. Not
no.
enough cars.
Mama.
Not enough cars. And people who are supposed to have two times a week, let's say, dialysis, they have once a month or twice a month. People who have chemotherapy, they have to start chemotherapy. We have the highest incidence of breast cancer in Europe.
Oh, my.
I had, thanks to Foundation, Yahoo's Foundation here in New York, it's a Greek foundation, we were able to get a mobile unit with digital mammography that has gone to our villages and examined the women. More than 100,000 women have been in that mobile unit.
Wow.
And we've been able to know when the cancer starts at an early age, and we are able to save these young mothers. Not all of them.
Right.
But we are able to save a lot. And we have the highest in Europe. So we have Sloan Kettering of New York has been coming every other year, and we have had conferences. And we have 500 of our oncologists attending those conferences. And we are so blessed to have Sloan Kettering coming, and the Evelyn Loder Foundation for Cancer has been coming.
Oh, wow.
Also, we have been sending a lot of doctors to Houston, to the medical centers there, and it's been a blessing. So it is it's hard to tell you exactly what we do, but all I know
you've told
is that
us, you've told us so much, Princess Catherine.
Exactly.
And social media, what do you think of this whole rise in social media and how you can connect with people all over the world? Have you delved into that at all, social media-wise, Princess Catherine, to be involved
you
with social media?
You mean to tell them a story?
Yeah, story on social media. Are you using Twitter? Are you using Facebook at all to bring out your world message, your world
You
deal?
Know, I have to admit, I'm not doing those things, which is wrong, but the office and my husband has been working on that, and they are on some kind of a Facebook and Twitter and all these things. I know I have to work more on that. So I need help to understand a little better and to invest more time in those things. But I'm running so fast.
You're so fast.
My husband is so busy. You know, he's become the symbol of unity, stability, and continuity in our country. And so, but I do promise to look into it a little more, Neil. I know that it can be magic. And a lot, when I walk into, for example, I had the director of a hospital coming to the palace in tears. I said, "What happened?" She says, "We have two ultrasound machines in the hospital, and both of them broke at the same time. Please help me." She says, "We have so many deliveries. We need to identify cesareans and all that." And so I get all kinds of visits like that with panic, people running to me in panic. You know, and so you see, maybe if people knew how much we're trying to help, and if people knew that they could do something for us, maybe it would have been their opportunity, like it's ours, to help those in need. And you're right. I just somehow have been running and fulfilling as many wishes as I can. Next week we are going to Chicago. We have event on the 30th in Chicago. And so, you know, I'm looking into two events now in Houston and one in Pittsburgh and Cleveland.
Oh, you're going to be in Pittsburgh. I'm in Pittsburgh. That's my flagship station, Pittsburgh.
Well, I tell you, you won't believe what Pittsburgh has done for us. You will not believe it. What happened is that we have some extremely serious operations for children, and we are not able to operate always because, you know, we need to send these children sometimes abroad because there's some specialties that would be better for the children, but there's no money in the country to send them abroad. And I've been in tears seeing how we lose lives of young children. So thanks to my relationship with Dr. Freelander at the hospital in Pittsburgh, University Hospital in Pittsburgh, who used to be at Harvard, the head of Harvard in neurosurgery, I was able to come to Pittsburgh with my husband and meet with the head of the hospital and the doctors, and we've been able to do telemedicine, which means that our difficult operations in our country is televised, and the American ambassador in our country, who is wonderful, was so excited and got involved as well, and we were able to bring the team from Pittsburgh to our country. And we ran out of money on this telemedicine, and the doctor himself, Freelander, in his home in Pittsburgh, he made a fundraising event. He was so passionate. He says, "We cannot stop this televised thing. We got to continue." So we had a very successful event, and we would like to come back and do one more now. But I need to try to organize it. But they've been very good in helping us, and we are very, very grateful. And now we are doing two more things with the Pittsburgh Hospital. One is electronic records.
Okay.
For example, when we had the floods of 35,000 people, the old people could not remember what medicine they were taking, and they were without medication because they could not remember. And, of course, without the records, how can they? And 35,000 people, and a lot of them were old people, old couples. And so if we had electronic records, this would not have been an issue. So this is exactly what we are also trying to do. But all this take money and all these things.
You need help. So you need donations. So we're the best place that people can donate all over the world because we have an international audience. I'm on my network of my 120 stations. Where can they donate and help and give and help out your causes, which are tremendous? What's the best place?
That is wonderful. First of all, I like them to designate and to tell me what's in their hearts to do, because it's very important when somebody donates to also have the right to say, you know, I like to help, let's say, those with cancer or those with diabetes, or I like to help the orphans, or I like to do, you know, it always helps to fulfill their wish. For me, it means a lot. But there are also some people say, look, do what you think is best, whatever is needed. But LifelineNY.org is the foundation in New York, and it could be wonderful if they can look it up. My website, my husband is not, is royal.rs, so they can look at royal.rs as well. But the foundation, and they can, it can guide them to Lifeline. But Lifeline. Aid.org is another, but the LifelineNY.org is the best one to look into, and they can see what we're doing, for example, tomorrow in being able to have a nice Lifeline, traditional Lifeline luncheon that we do every year here in New York in October, and they can see my life with the immigrants, for example. It's been an incredible situation. We have had so many immigrants from all over the world that have come. And recently, the last few months, of course, there are immigrants from Syria and other places, and my heart is breaking to see them all.
Yes.
Because there were thousands near the palace. Several thousand new ones.
So you're getting
several
many
thousand
from,
every day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
They
come through, and I would go there in the morning, and I will bring baby food. I would bring diapers, hygienic things for them. You know, these children are sleeping on cardboards in a park.
They
left their home, they left their families, they left their beds, they left everything to start a new life somewhere where they can feel secure. And I'm so sad. I'm so sad because I have experienced what wars can do.
Yes.
I know how they can destroy a family, they can destroy a life, and can destroy a country. So, but there's a lot of things we can do. You cannot imagine. I give you an example, just a few examples. When we were in Serbia at the beginning, when there was the conflict, and we kept going all the time during the conflict, in Bosnia, in Serbia, everywhere, because for me, I used to have a brochure when I used to go to Bosnia. It says we take aid, not sides. But anyway, and so when we went in Serbia as well, the young people said, can we have a bicycle? Because there was, they couldn't afford anything. So I went to United Kingdom, and I asked the Rotary Clubs, can you please find some bicycles for me? And they found hundreds of bicycles. And when I look at them, they were in terrible condition. I never give something that I cannot be proud of. So I didn't have any money. You know, it's good sometimes not to have money because you have to think. So I started thinking, what can I do with this terrible bicycle, the conditions? So I thought of the prisons. So I gave to the prisons in United Kingdom all those bicycles. And you won't believe the prisoners made them like new. It was amazing.
My.
It was amazing. Yeah. And they put a tag in the back, Her Majesty's Prison. So when you come to our country, you see all these bicycles with Her Majesty's Prison.
That's fantastic. You're humanitarian work. Prince Catherine,
exactly.
Amazing.
You know, people love to do a good deed. They feel good about it, and the better you feel about doing good, the more you want to be good. You know, and this is what the word is. My mother says we have two hands, one for us and one to help others. So, and I asked her when I was young, what does she expect from me? She says, one thing I expect from you. I said, what is it? She says, I want you to be a good example in life. We don't have enough good examples, and so and I try. When we lived in the United Kingdom before we moved to Serbia, I had someone who called me and said, I would like to help. I said, what can you do for me? She says, I'm a dispatcher in Birmingham, England. Mm-hmm. And I said, and you want to help me in Serbia? How do you do this as a taxi dispatcher? She says, we have a newspaper, the Taxi Association, and we can put a note saying that you would like to have taxis donated because our taxis are so big, as ambulances. You won't believe the number of taxes that were donated to me.
Oh, my. You're motivating me right now for how much I can do work-wise.
Really,
and help
unbelievable.
Others.
Unbelievable. And, you know, I went to receive those taxes, and I told the taxi people, look, I know you people are not rich people. Please tell me, why are you donating those taxes to me? And the answer I got was unbelievable. They said to me, you know, Princess, these taxes help us raise our families, and we never wanted to sell them because they're special for us.
Yes.
And now you're giving us a chance for these taxes to continue doing good. So yeah. We're happily giving them to you. And I had Jaguar paint them all white and put a red cross on it and put Lifeline on it. And they drove them for me. I had to fly the taxi drivers back. They drove them for me because what am I going to do? How am I going to get them there? And I said to them, I said, how come I had to buy 3 extra airline tickets? They said, Princess, please try to understand us. We are bringing 3 mechanics with us. So we, in case they had a problem. And CNN picked it up because they saw them in France refueling. And they put it all over CNN. I remember that. You're bringing memories because I forgot what I'm doing. I'm too busy to think what I've done.
Yeah.
I want to spend my time thinking what I can do in the future. And that's what I care. I care about doing good in the world.
Well, that's the amazing thing. A royal family like you are in Serbia and choosing to be amongst the people, education, healthcare, philanthropy, humanitarian aid, anything, opening up your country's doors to other refugees, all these amazing things that you guys are doing. And people need to donate by going to what website again, Princess
Lifeline Kathleen? NY for New York, lifelineny.org. And it is absolutely wonderful if anybody feels in their heart they want to share this joy of giving. I will be delighted to be the pipeline to try to help those in need.
Well,
everyone in the world needs to have a princess, because a princess that believes in humanity can do a lot of good. And I think that I've been very blessed with the opportunity, and I thank God for this opportunity to be able to make a difference in my country and for the destiny that God brought in my life, to be able to be chosen by my prince and to have enough faith in me to know that together we can make everyone a prince, a princess.
Yeah, so I love that. Everybody a prince, princess. I love that. That's fantastic.
Yes, well, that's right. Why not? You know, we all came together. We'll all go together. Life is a mission.
Exactly.
We are here for a short time, and we got to do what we can do, because everyone can do something. You know, when somebody gives a bicycle or gives a taxi, they have contributed too. You know, everyone has something to contribute.
Absolutely.
And even a smile is a contribution. When I go to the hospitals and the whole hospital is downstairs to receive me, I said to them, look, no one can be in a picture unless they smile, because it doesn't cost anything. So we have to try to be kind to one another and always have a good word to tell people, because we are responsible in making sure that life for everyone is good. Nobody comes next to us for no reason. We need to try to help everyone that comes and take time to listen to people, because it's an exciting world we live in.
Absolutely, Princess Kathleen. It was an honor to have you on the show. I hope we get an opportunity to connect when you come to Pittsburgh. I'll reach out to your team, and then hopefully we get to meet when you come to Pittsburgh someday. Okay.
Well, I appreciate that very, very much. And please pray for the immigrants, because winter is coming.
I will.
And I'm very, very worried about them sleeping in the park without a blanket.
I will.
Thank you so much. All the best to you, and good luck.
I will definitely be praying for the immigrants, and good talking to you, Princess Kathleen. Take care. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All the best.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye. All right, again, that was the Total Celebrity Show. Take care, everyone. We'll talk live again later today. Good day, everyone. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TollTitter.net, for more information. Twitter, TollTitter. Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TollTitter. Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. Also on Periscope, @TotalTutor. And I wanted to make sure that
that my producer says we have Joshua Hoffman on the line. Let me know when we have him on the line. We're going to get ready to start the interview.
Okay, one sec.
All right, so we're waiting for the connection for Joshua Hoffman. Again, websiteculture.net. Fantastic bunch of interviews we've had live this week. You got definitely got to tweet me at Total Tutor with questions and comments for sure. And this is what's so fun about live radio. You never know what happens in a live interview and how we're going to get things together. So we're just waiting on Josh Hoffman. Once Josh is on the line, we'll just get ready to roll. But, again, he stars in Nickelodeon's newest series, Talia in the Kitchen. So really an exciting conversation.
Josh, you're on live.
All right, so I'm so excited to welcome the program from Nickelodeon's newest series, Talia in the Kitchen, Joshua Hoffman. Joshua, thanks for calling, and how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on the show, especially on a Friday. I'm sure you're excited about the weekend. But for our audience out there, I'd like to know specifically, Josh, how you did you always want to be an actor? Is this something growing up you wanted to do?
Yeah, I mean, I've been surrounded by acting for all of my life. So it wasn't like a thing where I was a little kid and I was like, I really like that. You know, it was just a thing that, like, everybody in my family did. And it was just kind of something that kind of popped up. And then one day someone said, hey, you're kind of good at it.
Interesting. So so your family members weren't actors as well? Did they play in any notable roles?
Yeah, well, my dad is an actor, and so is my mom. So I was raised by two actors without actually knowing it for a while. And they taught me all these like little things as the days went on. It was very cool.
Interesting. Have they had any notable roles that you could bring up?
Stuff what?
That certain roles in acting? Or were they working actors most of their lives? Do they have anything that you could bring up that some of the roles they've played on different shows?
Oh,
or TV or movies?
My dad, when he was a teenager, he played in I can't remember what it was called, but it was Dinosaur City, I believe. It was this awesome kids movie, and I saw it. And it was funny for me to watch.
Interesting. And what about your mom?
She did a ton of stuff. I can't remember.
You have to ask her those questions. They know that background, especially a family of actors. So once you decided, they said, hey, we want you to get involved in this, what was your first kind of role in acting? What did you do?
Let's see, play or like television?
Anything. Just the first time you acted, because it's always interesting that story.
First time I ever acted. Oh, my gosh. I just remember. Hold on. I did this play for fun. It was, I'm getting a call. Sorry. I did this play, and it was a workshop, actually, just for fun. And I did this, it was a really cool acting class that I did in Big Bear. And it was, like, totally like, underground, and these people were like, hey, just do it for fun. I did it, and they said to do a play professionally where I live. So it was really cool. And then after that, my career went off.
Okay, so you did that, and then how did you get discovered from that? That once you knew you had the talent, let's go. And I'm looking at some of your work, and you did some pretty interesting things before this opportunity, it sounds like. For sure, some interesting acting parts. I like seeing, again, you were part, and you were in some parts with Girl Meets World. That's a very interesting the spinoff of, you know, Boy Meets World for sure. And how was your experience when you were playing the role as Dylan Orlando?
It was cool. I got to be on set, and I was able to hang out with like that whole entire cast and their people, Ben Savage. And we were messing around, and we had like this goofy rap battle, which was hilarious because like, it was just fun and great. It was my second job that I ever did on television, and it was quite a second job to have on such an established show right now.
Oh yeah, think about that. And I think they're even doing another spinoff soon too for Girl Meets World. Where it's going to be in a different. Do you remember what the name of that is? I'm sorry, I don't have that on my hand. The show that's going to be another show like Girl Meets World.
There is? I didn't know.
Yeah, I forget what it is, so who knows. But we're promoting Nickelodeon, so we cut off of that. So we have the experience there for sure. And also, you were part of a Golden Globe and Emmy-nominated Showtime original series, Shameless. Tell us that experience, too.
Yeah, that was an awesome experience. I got to do a scene with William H. Macy, and he was awesome and incredible. That was my first job I ever did. That was the very first job I
did. Oh, wow. Look, you've got some really good first jobs.
Yeah, my first job was in business. but I got to do a scene with him. I got to do a scene with Ethan. I can't remember the name of the character that he plays. And it was super fun. Yeah, it was like a fight scene I had to do, and it was like the most ultimate first job experience you could get.
Well, it sounds like it. It sounds very exciting indeed to get an opportunity like that. And that made it take off, right? Getting your first acting role and it ends up being Golden Globe and Emmy nominated. It's a good resume builder, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you go to Girl Meets World. And are there any other interesting acting things before this opportunity with Nickelodeon?
No, those are the only two jobs that I got, and I got into the kitchen.
So people must see that you're really great acting talent this early to get that, not a lot of experience, and bam, you're on a hit show. You're on a new series, and you're going to be in a starring role. So tell us how you were able to land this Nickelodeon job.
It took a process. It took a lot of time and energy, and it's just the standard auditioning process. You have an agent and manager, and they'll take you and they give you auditions. And when I got the audition for Celia in the Kitchen, I was slammed this week, and I was in high school. It was my freshman year of high school, first time ever being in school. I was homeschooled before, and an audition came up. So I did it, and I was, like, burnt to, like, my last dime. And I was like, you know what, that looks simple. I think I could just throw together a character last minute, threw it together, and then, you know, next day I got a call back, and the next day I got a call back, and I just kept doing it, and they kept bringing me in.
So being homeschooled, as high school starts, your mindset is on, you know, where is this acting thing taking me? And then, bam, you get this Talia in the Kitchen. You're like, holy cow, so... You read your role as Rudy Rosales, and it's a surprising opportunity, right? The role you're playing in show, for sure.
Yeah, it was a huge surprising. Yeah, it was.
So, for sure, can you tell a little bit about the show, for sure?
Yeah, of course. Celia in the Kitchen is a show about a teenage girl who decides to move to Miami just for the summer with her grandmother. And she discovers that she's a spice master. And what a spice master is a chef that whenever they cook with a certain amount of spices, they can influence emotions in whoever eats the food. And on the show, I play her best friend, who she meets in Miami. And I'm the guinea pig who has to try all of the foods when she first discovers them. So in the first season, it had a lot of me attempting to have all these foods that mess with my emotions, which was so fun as an actor. It was awesome. Genuinely, it was great. But it's about that. It's about a really cool guy there, and it has a lot of drama with it as well. I get friend-zoned, and I really like her. So, it's really fun, like a drama action.
And how are you in the kitchen, Josh? Is that something that you would say you're pretty good at? Is cooking at all?
I make a mean 5-minute pizza. no, not a very talented chef. I can make some stuff, but no, not too good in the kitchen.
Anyway, so you need to get whipped in shape by Chef Robert Irvine. I interviewed him a couple weeks ago and worked out with him. Fantastic guy for Restaurant Impossible. But I just was thinking of that. Said, well, you can't cook it. I'm glad he didn't ask me when I was working out with him, because he's unbelievably in great shape. He didn't say, oh, well, by the way, you cook, I'll say no. My wife cooks. I don't cook. That is, so I would definitely be one of those, like, you know, worst cook for sure. And so, and the main star on the show, has she ever cooked before the show or had any experience in the kitchen, or is it a role of having to learn that process for sure?
You mean the lead, Talia?
Yeah.
You mean
Talia?
Yes. She learned how to do it in the first season. I had to watch her. She took like a couple of classes. She was super focused. She like went home, practiced. There's scenes where she had to be like slicing and dicing and all this, you know, really cool looking stuff, and she was able to do it all. And we didn't get it done or anything. It was actually really awesome. But yeah, she really committed to learning. My character in the show is deliberately an awful cook, so I was like, yay, all right. Don't need to take classes on that.
Are you gonna? Yeah. Did you learn anything shooting the show about how to cook?
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, on set, I can't be a bad, you know, we're holding like real knives and we're cutting, you know, real food. You can't screw up a ton. So I learned all the safety things I have to do. But yeah, I did learn some little things. Make a couple little things up.
And so what would be the tips you would offer that, you know, things that you've learned in season one, meaning how to cook? They probably you'll never show on the show, but for yourself, that when you come home and say to your parents, hey, I'm going to cook for you tonight. What did you learn? Yeah. Simple stuff, right?
Yeah, like, Mom, I can like cut up the cheese and make a salad, and that's about it. I can do a little attention to detail things, and that's all.
And what you've learned from that process is, yes, you can do some of those things, but you've learned at least that you're not going to get people sick when you cook for them, right?
Yeah, it actually did move up in that. Yeah, I've noticed. Somebody keels over and dies whenever I cook. So
exactly. If you're cutting, make sure that the tomatoes don't go with raw foods, other like raw meat or certain things, saying, okay, I got to make sure that's separated. So if I'm just making the salad, because that's all the skill set I can do, that it doesn't get salmonella and then everyone gets sick after trying to eat it for sure. So that's definitely an important part. So maybe that should be a goal the next time you come on to go on the show when the next season they film. So, oh, by the way, I have to learn some more tips from Talia. And just say, I'm going to learn these so that if I can cook for my parents or on a date or something, it could be a really good thing that you're getting that hands-on experience at your age.
Yeah, it is. It's actually very cool.
Because I know for a fact my wife wishes I cooked. And I don't have the patience and all that stuff for sure.
I think pretty much every wife in my era in America would agree. Wishing their husband could cook.
Yes, and that's a hard thing for sure. I also see you're a performer as well. Tell us a little bit about that, Josh.
Huh?
Pianist and guitarist and singer and do all that. You do a lot of different things.
Yeah. I play piano. I play guitar. I'm looking at him right now. I'm in my room. Singing.
Yeah, so is that all your life? You've been performing in different things like that and being involved in singing guitars, piano? Is it something you just really enjoy? Or, again, being in an acting family, you have to develop that art and those ways of performing, not just with your words, but also with other actions as well.
Yeah, well, that's actually kind of true. It's really good to find a lot of ways to express yourself through art, and I love doing that. But in my family, I'm actually one of the only musicians for a couple generations on both lines, so I'm kind of an oddball. Like learning piano, I totally I did by myself. I learned music theory over Google, really, and everyone in my family does like singing, but not a lot of guitars and pianos.
So add all that, all this acting ability, you're a huge sports fan and competitive athlete. Okay, let's go with sports first. I love this. So every time I work with your agency, I interview a lot of girls or boys that are a little younger. Now I can talk to you about sports and say, okay, favorite professional NFL football team?
NFL football team? Oh, man. I love watching, like, football, but I don't have a favorite. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's good because you live in California. When you're in California, forget about it, right? You can't. There's really no team. Because the Raiders are terrible. Okay, let's go baseball.
Dodgers.
Okay. So were you upset about the firing, or you say if you have the two best pitchers in baseball, I better get out of the series, right? Have you ever get a chance to meet any of the Dodgers going to games or anything where you've been able to?
I have gone to a couple games for my birthdays when I was little, growing up a little bit more. But no.